is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here again for another Happy Hour with Dr. T. Tuesday is guest day. We now broadcast every day at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, but Tuesday is our guest day, where we invite special guests such as Christian authors, Christian businessmen and women, Christian, pastors and rabbis, and other people to come and join us to talk about what's going on in their life in relationship to the Lord, talk about their books, and quite frequently we'll have great conversations and then we'll pray together, which is a space that we created just for time of prayer. All of our podcasts, again, are aired daily at 11 a.m. And every morning we post something to read, something really short to read on our Substack at drtenpenny.substack.com. So in order to make all of these broadcasts and all of that writing possible, we want to thank all of you who have become a member and all of you who have joined Tenpenny Prime. That allows us to do all of this work and keep almost all of it for free for everyone who joins us. Your benefits are a monthly white paper, an educational recording, presentation that I do, and then the fourth Wednesday night of the month we do the Ask the Expert. And Ask the Expert, I'll bring in special people that you would not generally have access to be able to do open forum question and answer about the topic of the month. And here in April, we've spent the entire month talking about reproductive health and also infertility. So we have a special expert that came in with Dr. Kimberly Biss talking about female health and infertility, and Dr. Jonathan Brandt, who talked about male infertility and male reproductive health. And so this has been a great month for us. Next month, it's going to be based on brain health and the central neurological system. So you will be missing a lot if you don't become a member. And you also help us to be able to maintain all the things that we do for you on a monthly basis and a weekly basis. All our podcasts, again, I'll say, is available at 11 a.m. so you can watch them at your leisure. If you're not a podcast member yet, if you're not a Tenpenny Prime member yet, go to shoptenpenny.net, hover over the membership tab, and you'll drop down and you'll see all the benefits and all the things that we have included for our membership. We have decided to make the year 2025 a year of acknowledgement, empowerment, and action. Thank you for your continued support. Really, we can't thank you enough for all that you do to support all the work that we do behind the scenes. So before I introduce to you today's returning guest, Dave Howard, the author of The Christian Art of Verbal Chess, Speaking Life into Others, we're going to take a short break. You don't want to miss this. This is really, really interesting reading. I read this book this weekend, and it's really a book that you study. And so I'm really looking forward to digging into it and having a conversation about this book. We'll be right back.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Dave Howard holds a master's degree in public management from DePaul University and a bachelor's degree in criminology from California State University, Los Angeles. Dave is also a U.S. Army Vietnam veteran and a former FBI agent. He's an authority on workplace violence prevention and created the training program, The Art of Verbal Chess, that provides the tools to become a master communicator. He also served as a state representative and state senator for 13 years from 2009 to 2022 for the great state of Montana. And there's great stuff going up there now, Dave. You left a legacy that people could walk behind you. As a minister, he's the founder of the Foxhole Ministries and the creator of the national radio program, The Voice of Truth's Wake Up Call, which is a broadcast daily into 25 different states. This book, The Christian Art of Verbal Chess, is a proven process to learn how to fruitfully move through the verbal minefield of life, responding appropriately with peace every time. Ooh, we all need that in this volatile world, don't we?
Yes, we do. It's
an amazing book that gives us a path forward while we are fighting these evil agendas against our culture war. Dave, welcome back to Happy Hour with Dr. T. You know, after you were on our show the last time, you sent me this book, and we've been so busy. We're now just cycling around to be able to have you on to talk about this book. So thank you so much for joining us here this morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You know, your book starts out with a really interesting story on how you got into this by dealing with a smelly girl that was in jail. And
yes.
Then, and so tell us about that and your journey of how that started you to learn all the steps to become a master communicator.
Well, one of the key ingredients you learn really quick when you're an FBI agent is how do you deal with people verbally? I mean, we talk about interrogations, we talk about conversations, we talk about all kinds of things. Well, at the time that I went through the FBI Academy, pretty much their training was don't ask leading questions. Well, there's times you want to ask leading questions. So the one night, very late, I got a phone call. I was working the Indian reservation out of Montana, the Crow Indian Reservation, and there had been a murder. And I was called to go investigate it because on Indian reservations in Montana, any felony like that is investigated by the FBI. So I traveled down to the reservation, did a crime scene investigation of what took place, was able then to go to the jail, and they had arrested the wife of the man that was murdered. And the story was is that somehow she was involved because her possible boyfriend was the murder suspect. And she was actually a suspect too. Well, here I go walking into this Crow jail, and you can just imagine the smell, everything that's going on. I'm tasked with talking to somebody that we probably have nothing in common. And we didn't. And literally I walked back out of the jail cell because I couldn't hardly stand the smell. And bought a Coke and a chip, and then thought to myself, well, wait a minute, I'll get her a Coke and a chip, okay? And so I did that, walked back, handed it to her, and just sat there and kind of small talk a little bit. She wasn't very communicative, and then finished that, and then thought I'd go get another one, and did, and got her another Coke, and did sit there and didn't know what to say. But I just started sharing myself, where I came from, what did I do? Here I was sitting in a jail cell with a sports coat and a tie. She's sitting there pretty much with her pajamas on. Hair is all matted. I didn't feel like she probably took a bath the last month. I think things were just, and then so I just started talking about my family. She told me a little bit about her background, where she grew up, the fact that she married this Crow because people in her family were sexually abusing her. And she met this other man. And then she said, do you want me to give you a statement? And I said, sure. She said, you have a pad of paper? Yeah, I got a pad of paper. She wrote pretty well. And she wrote out a complete statement. And I'm walking out of that jail cell, and the Crow cops are kind of accusing me of being a con man. I'm going to get in my car and drive back to Billings, which is 70 miles away. And I'm thinking, how did I do that? You know, It was totally that way. How did I do that? And so I started thinking about that. And then later on in my FBI career, I was in Chicago. So I started studying interviewing techniques and body language and empathy statements and that type of stuff. And I created a program called the on-time symptom technique of interviewing. What that is you ask certain questions and you watch the person's body language. And when you do this, you have to not let them sit behind a table, and you're not going to sit behind a desk. You're going to get out in the open so you can see their whole body language. Because when you start learning body language, you start realizing we have less control over our feet than we do over our face. We grow up learning how to control our face, our emotions, our sight. Honestly, ladies are much better naturally than us men. I raised six daughters, I know. I didn't get this gray hair from age. It was raising those daughters. But the key ingredient is that you have to know what the language is. But where does this come from? To be successful at communication, you have to have the right character. So years later, I had my own private investigative company, and I was doing trainings in violence in the workplace because I started doing consulting in violence in the workplace. And I was asked by a fire department to come in and do a four-hour program on communication. Now, how do you bracket communication? It's so vast. So I got the idea of putting it from a chess set. I like to play chess, and almost everybody, whether you know how to play chess or not, you know it's a game of strategy. All meaningful communication is a game of strategy. But the key thing is this, my Christian background, I believe, enabled me to treat that woman that was in that jail cell with a great amount of compassion and empathy. It was part of me, what I wanted to do, how I wanted to treat her. That spoke louder than words. And you see, there comes the king of verbal chess. The king of verbal chess, and I've given this program, The Art of Verbal Chess, across the country, and I never told the audience that the king, I told him, is the character of Christ. I didn't tell him it was the character. It's our character. But truthfully, the king is the character of Christ. And grace, the queen, is the still skill of giving grace. So the thing is this, if you can't give people grace, you can't speak to someone, you don't really care what they say. And that's the key. The key is, how many times do we listen to somebody, but we don't understand we're affirming them. We're giving them grace. And you see, there's two things humans need most of all. I scuba dive for a number of years. And I can tell you, you need oxygen. Because if you're at 50 feet and it goes... You got about 2.5 minutes. You're going to look around for oxygen. Well, what is the third thing we need? Or the second thing, I'm sorry. The second most important thing we need is a psychological thing called being affirmed. And you cannot affirm someone unless you listen to them. Literally, I go through a process. I've asked my wife over the years, I said, if you have something important you want to talk to me about, just say, I'd like to talk to you about something. I go through a mind process where, you know, you put down the control, you put down everything, you go over and sit on the chair, and you put my listening hat on.
You know, that's a really good point that you bring out in the book about all these things that we learn in school. We learn how to read, we learn how to write, we learn how to do math. We also learn how to do all kinds of communication things, but we never are taught how to listen. We're taught how to speak. We're taught how to sing. We're taught how to, you know, sometimes learn to read body language, but we're never ever, that was such a good point that you brought on your book, that we are never taught the skill of listening. We just take it for granted.
And it is probably one of the main skills. We all think we want to listen, but most of us listen by thinking about what we're going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't really listen, okay? And the key ingredient is, I can't emphasize this enough. Once I learned how to put my listening hat on, and I visually go through that process, because I'm a gregarious type of guy and I always have something to say, all right? It's not always good, but it's always something, right? So I have to tell myself to shut up, okay? And then I have to focus in and truly empathically listen, okay? And I have to do that. Otherwise, I don't know what the person is feeling, what they're understanding it. All humans don't say exactly what they mean. But if you watch the body language, you watch their palms gestures, you watch different things that they're doing, their mannerisms. And then when it comes to body language, what you do is you always start the conversation off with something that they have to tell the truth about. Like, you know, with guys, you know, what football team do you ball? And you start seeing them using their palms gestures and stuff like this to tell them about. And then they start telling you another story. And then if they start doing this, okay? But you see, that's being concerned about me, okay? So you can see these things changing right in front of you. You don't have to be an expert in body language. You just have to watch it. And by doing that, you can sort of detect the truthfulness of what you're hearing. Plus the fact is that you figure out where the person is actually coming from. I give the example of a fireman that was a medic, and he was also, you know, the chaplain. And he would go out and start talking about these people that lost people. And this woman finally said, "Well, that's great for you, but today I'm telling you about me." Okay. "Wow," he said, you know, you learn how to listen.
You know, you say in your book that there's four types of communication, but we're never taught to listen. We talked about that a little bit. And then you go on to describe five different types of listening. Mm-hmm. And talk about that a little bit, because I think most of us don't think about that. You know, I think sometimes we think about active listening versus passive listening, but we don't really think about that there's different types of listening that we do. I mean, passive is kind of that thing that's the music that's playing in the background while you're working on whatever mm-hmm. you're doing. And then active listening is when you're really super engaged. But you defined five different types of listening. Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, the first one's just ignoring.
Okay.
Yeah, we just ignore people. I mean, we look right in their face and we just don't hear a thing they're saying. The other one is pretend listening. Mm. You know, pretend listening is kind of like, yeah, no. And we've all seen it with cell phones. Okay. You'll be talking to somebody and they go, "Okay, yeah, I'm hearing what you're saying." No, they're not. Mm-hmm. They don't care or rats me out what you're saying. Okay. That's the biggest insult you can do. In fact, if you want to talk to somebody, hide this. Hide it. Because if you have it in your hand, that's more important than what you're doing.
Yeah, I've said that. There are times when I've said that to people, like I'm talking on the phone and I can tell that they're multitasking, doing something else at the same time. I'll either stop and pause, and then they're like, oh, what's happening? What did I miss? Or I'll say, you know, I really would appreciate if you stop what you're doing and let's get engaged in this conversation. It's not going to be really long, but it's very important. You know, because sometimes people just have to be called on their stuff, you know?
That's right. Yeah. One is selective listening. And selective listening is that it's a topic you want to hear a little bit about, but then they start talking about something you already know about. Okay. So what you've done is you've stopped listening. You're thinking about whatever else you're thinking about, what you're going to say. You're half there. You're just part of there, you know. The other thing is kind of attentive listening. That's kind of focusing on just the words. That's kind of what we do when we talk on the phone. We see on the phone, we lose about 60% of the communication. We're not watching the person we're talking to, and we're not seeing their whole body. We're not understanding what's going on with them, and they don't understand what's going on with you. Okay. So we're just doing this. I mean, we've all done things like, okay, tomorrow I'll meet you at Chili's, right? Okay. I'm going to be there at 1 o'clock. Well, across the street is another restaurant that's similar. And we're there and they're at Chili's, or either that or they're there. Okay. So what you do is you tell them what you said, but they said, okay, tomorrow you're going to meet me at, you see, that shows you're listening. The other thing is emphatic listening. That's where you're deeply listening and you're not thinking about what you're going to say. And you're going into the process by actually trying to deeply understand them. So it's a process where the only thing you're doing is asking questions. You're not telling them anything. So by asking questions, you have to listen, you see? And that's so important because, you know, in the FBI, I can tell you about interviews that I've had where, you know, I've had all kinds of weird things. I mean, I had a guy talking to me where every time he would start to tell me something, he would look at the wall and then he would turn back to me. And then what I thought, what is this guy doing? Okay. So I'm listening and he's telling me about something that was very dear to him, that something that hurt his family. But every time he told me that, he looked at the wall. So what I did is I took him away from that subject and I started talking about what kind of football team he talked to. He won. He literally, when he told me something serious about the team, he would look at the wall. It was his mannerism, okay? When he was serious and truthful, he looked away. Now, where'd that come from, okay? I don't know, but by listening, I was able to determine that his mannerisms was being truthful, not lying, not telling me a story. So it's that kind of stuff. It is, you know, physical survival. We want oxygen and we need to be affirmed. If you have a loved one, a wife, a child, I mean, what is the most toughest thing? You go in and you're going to see the family and their 8-year-old boy is starting to tell you a story. And you got the stuff in your hands and you got to go into the kitchen. You got to put this. There's 4 things you got to do. So what I do is I sit it down, give him a hug and say, can you wait just a second? Let me take this in the kitchen. I've just affirmed it. I take it into the kitchen. I walk in the other room and I sit down and say, now, what is it you want to tell me? And then they listen to you. Okay. You listening to them. And then they know you love them. They know you care about them. You see, when you don't listen to somebody, they find out really quick. You don't care. That's why speaking life into others, if you want to bring somebody to Christ, you have to listen to them. And you have to do it in such a way that they want to be around you, because so few people actually totally listen.
You know, in addition to the different types of listening, you know, when you go through all of the different chess players and what they represent, which we'll get to in just a couple of minutes. Okay. But I want to ask you first about, you know, you say that in order to be a master communicator, it's like becoming a master chess player and that you have to practice it. And even though you're a master, you don't always win. And no. So talk about that a little bit, because I think that people think once they master something and that means that they're always going to win. And you would learn how to become a master verbal chess player in order to always win an argument. But that's really not the intent. So talk about that a little bit.
The funny truth is that my wife sometimes tells me, you're losing the battle of verbal chess. I wrote the book. So you're exactly right. That comes to humility, okay? Humans are inconsistent, we're complex, and we're flawed. That's the norm. So whoever you're talking to, they're inconsistent, they're complex, and they're flawed. Now, through communication, a lot of times, you can find out whether they're truthful, whether they can be trustworthy, where they can be this. But like chess, in fact, it's kind of comical. Just the other day, my 10-year-old grandson has just been, I've been teaching him how to play chess. So he had been practicing for a week, and I come over to the house and he says, "Grandpa, will you play me a game of chess?" Well, he beat me in 4 moves.
Seriously, okay. Dick?
Just like that, okay? Now, what has he been doing? Here I, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm playing this 10-year-old, right? Okay, so how, what kind of, I'm trying to just play the game. He bang, 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 checkmates me. Then he brags for 2 days that he beat Grandpa, okay? But, and that's wonderful. But you have to realize that this communication is something we need to practice. And most of all, we have to have self-control. You see, the integrity of the of Christ, is that I've explained in verbal chess, is the foundation of who we are. And if we don't have integrity, if we don't have hope, in fact, I wrote a story about a young man I met in Korea. He was in the hospital. And what's interesting is he went through an experience that I wrote about where he thought he was going to die at any minute. But the thing is, his belief in God and the fact that his hope and the fact that even when he thought he was going to die, he had peace. And that he was able to persevere. That is so, so important for us to understand. And that's the key in a lot of being having an effective life. I hate using the term successful because in today's world, we think of that being money, okay? But you can be a hardworking man and be any kind of profession and have a great family, pull them together, treat them as they should, have that family mold together. That is success. That is being who you are. That is what a father is all about. That is being like Christ. So yeah, being effective, you have to be an effective communicator.
And one of the other types of communication you talk about a lot in your book is strategic communication.
Mm-hmm.
How do we learn how to do that and how is that used?
Now say that again. I didn't quite understand that, what you just said.
One of the other types of communication you talk about is strategic communication.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we learn that skill and when is it used?
The thing is, strategic communication is, well, it could be something like we have a problem in the family, or that you're going to go out and you're trying to sell a product, or you're going to go in and you're going to talk to your boss about a raise. You have to have a strategy and you have to start really pulling all of these parts together. To be able to listen, to be able to speak. Remember, at speaking, it's at different empathy levels. People have high empathy. That's usually where we don't get a word in edgewise, okay? And then low empathy, that usually kills communication. The person indicates one way or the other, they don't want to listen and they don't want to talk to you, you know? Medium empathy, though, if you can learn it, has a tendency to make the person want to respond back to you. I mean, the simple example I gave in the book was somebody comes up, "It's raining outside," and you say, "It's raining?" Now they have to speak, you see? So what you're doing is you're using medium empathy as a way to get them to tell you things. And the thing is that you can guide the conversation that way. That is really getting into strategic. And then using the pawns of verbal chess. In verbal chess, there's 13 pawns. And in a chess game, there's 8. But the key ingredient is with verbal chess is people make up their own pawns. You could have 15, 16, 17 pawns. But one of the key pawns is the ability to ask questions. To ask questions affirms the person you're talking to. It gets them to speak. And you can determine the truthfulness. You can determine what's going on. And you can start emphatically listening and understand what's really happening to them in their lives and how you can edify them in a lot of ways by listening, body language, and controlling your own body language.
You know, we used to teach a course. It was called Mastering Vaccine Info. And my business partner and I taught this course, and I taught the vaccine portion of it, and he taught the language portion of it. And that's one of the things that we did was people say, how do I talk to my fill in the blank, you know, son, daughter, husband, neighbor, mother, you know, whoever, how do I talk to somebody that's strictly and rigidly pro-vaccine? And how do I break through to them and tell them that there's another side of the story? I said, and the main part of that was like one of your pawns that you just said, it wasn't about trying to tell them anything because it just bounced off their forehead. It would ask them questions. Do you know? Sure. What do you think? Yes. Have you ever considered? Have you read? Have you read the story? Have you heard the story? Have you seen this? Because it's kind of human nature that when you're asked a question, subconsciously you feel compelled to answer it. Even if you answer it like by yelling at somebody and telling them to shut up, you're still trying to answer them. And so, I mean, that skill set, we've talked about that a lot over the years in our courses about just asking questions. You know, make sure whatever you're going to say in a statement, switch it around and turn it into a question, and you'll get a lot further ahead. You know, what I want to do, Dave, is when we're going to take a really quick break here, then we're going to come back and go through each of the chess pieces and how you defined them and pick up where we left off from that. Because this is so good. And like I've said, this book, because I read this weekend, The Christian Art of Verbal Chess, Speaking Life into Others. It's a manual. I mean, it's something that you read over and over again because it's a little book, but it is tons of information in here, tons of really good stuff. So we're going to take a really, really quick break. We're going to be right back. Today, we're talking with Dave Howard, and we're talking about this amazing book, The Christian Art of Verbal Chess. We're going to take a quick break. There's a lot more to come. We'll be right back.
There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Again, today we're talking to David Howard about his book, The Christian Art of Verbal Chess. And he used the idea of a chess board, a chess game. You know, I learned how to play chess when I was about 8 years old. This was many, many years ago. And so my dad had bought me a chessboard, and they were like the little pieces. They were little cardboard cutout pieces that had the name of the piece and the direction that that piece could move on the board. And I practiced, I was entertained by what you were saying about your grandson. You know, he beat grandpa. I practiced and practiced and practiced until I could play the game. And my dad was a pretty decent chess player, and it took me years to beat him until I finally won a game. And then my dad, being who he was, as soon as I beat him, he would never play with me again. It's like, well, you've learned how to play now. You don't have to wait a minute. You know, there's more to it than that, but I understand about the chess pieces and how they play. So let's go through each one of the chess pieces. And you start out by saying the king is the most important player, which if you are a chess player, you know that the king is what you protect and what you're trying to, if you're the aggressor, you're trying to capture it. And that's where where the word checkmate comes from, because you get the king into a corner that can't move anywhere and there's nothing that can protect him. So you say that the king is the most important player in verbal chess with 10 disciplines. integrity, self-control, humility, gratitude, acceptance, patience, forgiveness, faith, and hope, which all support perseverance. That is quite a list. And it's, of course, that sort of fulfills our trying to be Christ-like. But boy, trying to practice all of those ways of being. Tell us how you teach people to integrate that into their life.
Well, the key ingredient is, it's the Holy Spirit. I can tell you that growing up, people ask me, when did you come to the Lord? And I don't have a time or a date, because in my life, I was kind of like a crock pot. Okay. I kept getting hotter as I got older. Okay. And so it was an event. Okay. It was not that day, that type of thing. But here's the key. When you start trying to be like Christ, you start emulating those examples and also those tools. You see, it enables you to do things like congratulate your grandson for beating you in chess and finding joy in the fact that he goes and tells the whole family. You see? And see what it is, that is, comes from Christ, because every one of us, a fellow once, I did a presentation years ago at a place where there were about 75 people, and an elderly lady walked up and said, "What kind of a Christian are you anyway?" And I thought, oh my gosh, here I'm giving a program on the culture war and that kind of stuff. And I said, well, just a minute, when I start, I'll tell you. And I turned around and I thought, oh Lord, what am I supposed to say? You know? And then I remembered this story, and I told the lady, this kind lady asked me, what kind of a Christian are you? And I said, well, this is the kind I am. I said, I'm like the guy that looked up to the Lord. And he said, Lord, I'm having a perfect day. I haven't thought about sex. I haven't cussed. I haven't done one thing wrong. And in a few minutes, I'm going to get out of bed.
Oh, that's a good one. That's
really good. So that's what humility gives you. Okay. Mm-hmm, and then you're talking about those things. So it's something that you're growing into and you're trying. Are you always successful? No. But usually when you're not successful, that small voice whispers to you and you look in the mirror and say, oh, Dave, what did you do that for? Okay. So what you're doing, it's a self-correcting. It's a something that we're all working on. I'd love to say I'm there, but I'd be fibbing if I told you that.
And you're out of bed already this morning, right?
That's right. I'm all out of bed. So the skill of giving grace. I mean, honestly, this is a skill, because of the fact that you're able then to talk to someone that you really don't want to talk to. Okay. You're able to go out like to a church social or something like this. And I've had this where the people across from you, and you're sitting there eating a hamburger at a senior event, and they're telling you, and they're using high empathy, and they just will not be quiet, okay? Well, how do you listen to that, okay? So you have to give grace. And if you do give them grace and you do listen to them, they will leave there thinking you're a pretty good person because you've affirmed them, okay? And that's what we're trying to do. Emphatic listening. You know, we listen at all of these different levels, you know, like we had talked about, but it's a goal. For me personally, I have to visualize putting on my listening hat. Okay. Nights is strategic speaking. Okay. High empathy, medium empathy, low empathy. Somebody says it's raining outside. You say, I don't care. The conversation's over. It's raining outside. Yeah, when I got out of the house, I got in the rain and I did this and I did that. You know, that's high empathy. I'm not listening. I'm speaking. It's raining outside. Yeah, it is raining. Then they're telling you something and you're asking them a question. Then you do it and you're communicating with them. And they feel good because they like talking to people that listen to them. That's just what we all do. The castle is the silent communication. It's body language, and it's also personal space. We've all had close talkers, where somebody comes up and they stand 2 feet from you and you can smell their breath because their face is about this far away, you know, and you're continually backing up, okay? And that's uncomfortable. Also, too, when you're looking at people from a distance, okay, especially the FBI, you can see barriers just like a dog. I mean, you come in and you rattle the gate, and the dog looks up on the front porch. You open the gate and the dog stands up. You know what's happening next. Step in and that dog's coming, right? Okay. So you have to watch how far you are from people. You can be too far away. That's why everybody at the back of the church goes to sleep. Nobody on the front row goes to sleep. Okay. Why do people sit on the back row? So they can go to sleep.
Not always. Right. I'll say that in self-defense, because I've been a back row sitter since I was in kindergarten. So I like to sit in the back. And I just want to remind our listeners who may not be avid chess players, but I'm sure you've seen chess pieces. The castle is the one that looks like a castle. That's got a little thing around the top that looks like a castle. And the knight is the one that looks like half a horse, looks like a horse head. And differently, and it's kind of stealth on the board, and the castle's kind of it kind of like takes you on a front. It kind of runs into you because it can only move front and back or sideways, and so it can really plow into you. And the bishop is the long, skinny one, and it can only move on diagonals. And so it is, as you say in your book, the empathetic listener. And so because it's looking at things more diagonally. And so how does a strategic listener differ from an empathetic listener?
Well, the thing is this, I think it depends on your goal of the conversation, okay? Like when I was in the Senate in Montana, matter of fact, I was the chairman of Health and Human Services, and I helped carry the bill that prevented people from being forced to take vaccinations in Montana.
Oh, okay. Good for you. Yes. My hero.
I can tell you, I had a lot of opposition, okay? It was especially from the hospitals, okay? And you see, when people are that prone to try to get what they want, you know that the bottom line has to be money someplace, okay? Okay? It's just that simple. Well, you see, luckily, I had the kind of reputation that most lobbyists hated, because I funneled things through biblically, through our Constitution. Then I had to ask if that's something that took your liberty away, and then do you need it, and then who's going to pay for it? Well, when it talks about vaccinations, all of those are a no, okay? You're taking away your liberty. You're forcing people to take something. You look at the history of vaccinations, and just, you don't have to be a doctor to realize that. Although it's interesting, we had doctors testifying that they were wonderful. Okay. But you see, what we started doing is asking the doctors if they had any situation where vaccines were adverse. And these doctors that were paid to testify would say no. And then what we would do is we'd call that doctor forward and start giving them all the different stuff that we'd found, okay, and ask them, how can you be a doctor for 20 years and not know this? Pretty soon we looked around and all the doctors that were testifying were gone.
Wow.
They didn't want to be called up because they were lying. But you see, the thing is you look at their body language when they're standing up there. I mean, literally, we had doctors stand up there like this. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, you think about it. Why would you stand up there holding on for yourself, holding on for dear life? This is truthful. This is not.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like we've tried for years to set up a debate between the pro-vax and the educated unvaxxers. We would rather call them unvaxxers, right, than anti-vaxxers, because they've read, they've thought critically, They see the results. They understand all kinds of things. And we've tried to get them to debate us, and they won't, because their theory is that if they engage in a debate, then it's something worth debating. And as far as they're concerned, they're right, we're wrong. End discussion. Science is done. Vaccines are safe, effective, protective, and necessary, and they're none of those things. So congratulations, and thank you so much for doing that when you were in the Montana Senate. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, the thing is this, I don't want to say this wrong, but if you don't know there's problems in vaccines, you either have to be totally clueless or you're volitionally stupid.
I like that. That's good.
Honestly, there's no other path, okay? Even in my family with some, we had one of my daughters, her little boy had seizures 15 minutes after getting a shot, okay? Okay. Now, no one knows how it caused that, but I can tell you it was caused right after that shot, okay? So, anyway, back to verbal chess. That's your passion. It's one of mine too. So the other aspect of verbal chess is the pawns. You see, the pawns, there's 13 pawns, and I'll go through them quickly. The approach pawn is how you approach people, and it's something you do every time. You shake their hand, you introduce yourself, you go through a process, okay? You're attentive. The other thing is you personalize things. A personalized pawn says people want to know who you are. So you don't talk about yourself. You're just personal, that you get questions, you open, and you're that type of stuff. Then you forecasting. Forecasting is simply explaining the direction and the purpose you want the conversation to go in. Okay. You have an assurance pawn. Assurance is a positive declaration. It's indicated to give confidence. It could be a compliment. Clarifying, where you use clarifying statements, are either short or they're medium, they're questions, okay, to be able to clarify something and that people understand you're listening. In a verb, fact finding, that's where you're going down and you're talking about the facts, okay? That's where the insurance lobby and the hospital lobby, they hated coming in and talking to me and pushing vaccines because I went to fact finding, okay? What is it you do? What do you know about this? What is it? No, you're in here lobbying for it and you don't know these things. You see?
Very good.
Yeah, they hated talking to me. The refresh pawn. Refresh is simple as used. It's an act of charity. It's a small favor. It's like bringing that lady in that jail cell a Coke and chips. It said, I care about you. I didn't realize it at the time. I was trying to take the chips up here so I could smell something else besides what was going on. I'd love to say my motives was that, right? You know, I had to self-analyze what I was doing, okay? Also, it's a praise pawn. I mean, like talking to little children and things like this, you know, that's a really a good idea, okay? You're talking to somebody where you're discussing something. An apology pawn. You know, the biggest silly movie I ever saw years ago before I got married is Love Has Never Happened to Say You're Sorry. Well, men, learn how to say you're sorry and do it quickly.
And women too, not just men, and women too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But the key thing is that if you apologize quickly, then people understand it was not something you were intending to do. You see, if you cunningly did something, we never apologize for that. But if it's spontaneous and it's wrong, and we figured out it was wrong, it's easy. Also, too, vicarious apology. Vicarious is like an employee might say, you know, every time you walk by me, you ignore me. I ignore you? Yeah, every time you walk by me, you know, when's the last time I walked by you? Well, about 15 minutes ago. Was I ignoring you? What did I look like? Okay. You know, I'm sorry you feel that way. You see what I did? I set the stage, and then I ended it with a vicarious apology. Then you see swing phrase. It would take a little while for me to explain the swing phrase because of the fact that when you read it, you realize you can swing the subject around, and you can turn things around if you use certain techniques to do that. The other thing is that appeal. You can appeal to somebody's good sense. Like for instance, I ask a person, I think it's in the book, you know, the tires on your wife's car are almost bald. Yeah, I know that. Do you have any idea what would happen if she was going 80 miles an hour and they blew out? And he goes, oh my gosh, I've got to get those fixed. You see, you appealing through communication, through asking what the conclusion is.
A whole bunch of these in your book, and we're going to run short on time here. And okay. I want to have you just in, we just have, you know, maybe 5-10 minutes left, but your whole idea is to become a Christian master communicator, to be able to get through those sticky situations where people confront you about biblical things. How do you transform these wonderful techniques? And I really encourage everybody, if you're married, if you're single, if you're thinking of getting married, just because you live in life and you talk to people all the time, that you get this book, because it's worth having in your library. The verbal chess, speaking life into others, because it's not a book that you just sit down and read like it's a novel. I mean, there is a lot to absorb in here and a lot of exercises that you can do and like taking it forward. How do people apply these to their Christian life, Dave?
Well, I think it is that you, at the very beginning of the book, they tell you what the minimum win is. The minimum win is the person you've talked to, they haven't agreed with you. They don't think anything you're saying is right, but they walk away respecting you. That's the key. The key is anytime we want to speak into somebody's life, they have to respect us, because if they respect us, then they will trust us. And when you're trying to tell somebody the truth of Christ, they have to trust what you're saying. They have to look at you and say, you know, this man believes what he's telling me. And you can only do that by having the character, by showing respect, by affirming the person, by honestly listening to them, by asking them questions, by being legitimately concerned about them. If you're not, they're not listening. They're not going to hear you. They might say they do, but they don't.
You know, and what you say is it's so grounded in scripture. You have a section in the back of the book of all the different scriptures that apply. It says the Christian art of verbal chess. And so there's all these different scriptures that are part of it, so that can help with your study process. And whenever I invite a guest on my show on Happy Hour, I always ask them to submit a verse from the Bible that has meaning or means something to them. And it's amazing sometimes the verses that I get from what people are, what they're writing about, what they're doing about. But what you submitted is absolutely so solid with this book, which is Colossians 4:4. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you know how you ought to answer each person. So this whole verbal chess, it comes straight from the Bible. So how did you get so focused on that particular verse?
Well, the thing is I understood through my life and my experience and interviewing hundreds of people that right there, it says how you ought to answer each one. Okay. That's the key. You have to be able to answer, but to answer, you have to have speech that is filled with grace and it's seasoned with salt. Okay. And there's such a vast meaning to that, but that is legitimately projecting a care, a compassion, an empathy for someone that is so rare today that people want to hear what you have to say.
It's true. And people, you know, they either think they already know what you're going to say, or they sort of half listen, like what you're talking about with the cell phone. Well, this has just been so delightful to have you back on the show and talk about this book today, because it's such an important book. I mean, it really is a book that's everybody who's listening to this. And I'll show you again. The name of it is The Christian Art of Verbal Chess, Speaking Life into Others by David Howard. And it's just been such a great discussion, and I knew it would be. And this is a really important book. That it's a lifetime book. It's not anything that you just read once and you put down, because there's so much in there to kind of tell you everything. So where can we best find the book? And the other thing I want to know is, because of you have taught classes and things about that, do you have recorded classes or something that people can purchase or buy and go through your courses with this?
You know, there's something I have should put together. I have not. In fact, what I wanted to do with this is to not only put it on audio, but also to create a workbook so you can work through it.
Yeah.
You see? And that's something that's coming. This book, of course, is on Amazon. And if you look up the book on Amazon, you can purchase it on Amazon. That's where it's available for. Yes.
So I'm going to just give you a good hard elbow in the ribs and get this done, because it would be something you could record each lesson and have it on your website, and people could support you with that, or they could at the very least get the lessons, because there are so many incredible lessons here. And with your life stories about being a cop and with the FBI and then being in the Senate, I mean, that's a war zone, and all the different things that you've done throughout your life, you bring in your life experiences into this verbal chess. I can tell you that so many people, they don't even know that they need it yet, but they need it. And they need to have your hands on this book and a workbook and a whole course design. Now, isn't that just great of me to just tell you what to do with your book?
I take it very well, because it's something that, you know, you should do. I kid people and tell them that I'm a charter member of the Shoulda Club.
I get that. Dave, it's been such a delight having you here. As we close out in our last couple of minutes from our session today, would you be so gracious as to lead us in a word of prayer?
Yes, I will. Father, we're in such interesting times, and there are evil times and there are good times. I just pray that you will touch every individual that we're talking to this day, and let them know that the most powerful thing they can speak is the truth of God. Because the promise is the Holy Spirit will intercede for us, and it will do that positively, and it will comfort us, and it will guide us, and it will even tell us what is to come, Father. I pray that we will all hang our hat on that Spirit of truth, and know that through the Spirit, we can gain a type of peace inside of our heart that is only available through Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Amen. Well, thank you so much. And I know that when I have you back on the next time, we're going to talk about your courses and your workbook. This is so important and so needed. It's been needed for a long, long time, but it's especially needed now. Like you said in your prayer, we live in interesting times, and it's going to get more interesting and more volatile, and we need that kind of guidance. So I want to thank you so much for that. And I want to thank all of our members who come here weekly and join us every Tuesday morning at Happy Hour with Dr. T. We're both grateful and honored to have you here. And we really, really appreciate our Tempani Prime members and all of you that have supported us for so many years, because it's what keeps us going and what floats this big boat that we have. And we have a lot of activities. So we really, really appreciate your support. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, is Morning Coffee with Dr. T, where we do open forum question and answer. It's kind of my favorite one that I do all week, because I really get to interface with all the people that join there through Rumble and through Telegram specifically. And we have our deep dive Bible study on Thursday and our archives on Friday. And so, and then on Monday mornings, we always have This Week with Dr. T, which is our new show. So until we see you again on a next broadcast, want you to lean into God, trust Him for everything. He won't let you down. Dave, thank you again so much for being here. Thank you for your work. And for everyone thank else, you. Have a great week, everybody. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.